Chapter 3. Few bolts and bars were between us. The portress was a heavy sleeper, and I knew where her keys hung, on the nail just within the door of her cell. I stole thither, unlatched the door, seized the keys and crept barefoot down the corridor. The bolts of the cloister door were stiff and heavy, and I dragged at them till the veins in my wrists were bursting. Then I turned the key, and it cried out in the ward. I stood still, my whole body beating with fear lest the hinges too should have a voice, but no one stirred, and I pushed open the door and slipped out. The garden was as airless as a pit, but at least I could stretch my arms in it. And, oh, my father, the sweetness of the stars! The stones in the path cut my feet as I ran, but I thought of the joy of bathing them in the tank, and that made the wounds sweet to me. My father, I have heard of the temptations which in times past assailed the holy solitaries of the desert, flattering the reluctant flesh beyond resistance. But none, I think, could have surpassed in ecstasy that first touch of the water on my limbs. To prolong the joy, I let myself slip in slowly, resting my hands on the edge of the tank, and smiling to see my body, as I lowered it, break up the shining black surface, and shatter the starbeams into splinters. And the water, my father, seemed to crave me as I craved it. Its ripples rose about me, first in furtive touches, then in a long embrace that clung, and drew me down, till at length they lay like kisses on my lips. It was no frank comrade like the mountain pools of my childhood, but a secret playmate compassionating my pains and soothing them with noiseless hands. From the first I thought of it as an accomplice. Its whisper seemed to promise me secrecy, if I would promise it love. And I went back and back to it, my father. All day I lived in the thought of it. Each night I stole to it with fresh thirst. But at length the old portress died, and a young lay sister took her place. She was a light sleeper, and keen-eared, and I knew the danger of venturing to her cell. I knew the danger, but when darkness came I felt the water drawing me. The first night I fought on my bed and held out, but the second I crept to her door. She made no motion when I entered, but rose up secretly, and stole after me. And the second night she warned the abbess, and the two came on me as I stood by the tank. I was punished with terrible penances. Fasting, scourging, imprisonment, and the privation of drinking water, for the abbess stood amazed at the obduracy of my sin, and was resolved to make me an example to my fellows. For a month I endured the pains of hell, then one night the Saracen pirates fell on our convent. On a sudden the darkness was full of flames and blood, but while the other nuns ran hither and thither, clinging to the abbess's feet or shrieking on the steps of the altar, I slipped through an unwatched postern, and made my way to the hills. The next day the emperor's soldiery descended on the carousing heathen, slew them and burned their vessels on the beach. The abbess and nuns were rescued, the convent walls rebuilt, and peace restored to the holy precincts. All this I heard from a shepherdess of the hills, who found me in my hiding, and brought me honeycomb and water. In her simplicity she offered to lead me home to the convent, but while she slept I laid off my wimple and scapular, and stealing her cloak fled away lest she should betray me. And since then I have wandered alone over the face of the world, living in woods and desert places, often hungry, often cold and sometimes fearful, yet resigned to any hardship, and with affront for any peril, if only I may sleep under the free heaven, and wash the dust from my body in cool water. V. The hermit, as may be supposed, was much perturbed by this story, and dismayed that such sinfulness should cross his path. His first motion was to drive the woman forth, for he knew the heinousness of the craving for water, and how St. Jerome, St. Augustine and other holy doctors have taught, that they who would purify the soul must not be distraught by the vain cares of bodily cleanliness. Yet, remembering the lust that drew him to his laws, he dared not judge his sister's fault too harshly. Moreover, he was moved by the wild woman's story of the hardships she had suffered, and the godless company as he had been driven to keep Egyptians, jugglers, outlaws and even sorcerers, who are masters of the pagan lore of the East, and still practice their dark rites among the simple folk of the hills. Yet she would not have him think wholly ill of this vagrant people, from whom as he had often received food and comfort, and her worst danger, as he learned with shame, had come from the Girvayr wandering monks, who are the scourge and dishonor of Christendom, carrying their ribald idleness from one monastery to another, and leaving on their way a trail of thieving, revelry and worse. Once or twice the wild woman had nearly fallen into their hands, but had been saved by her own quick wit and skill in woodcraft. Once, so she assured the hermit, as he had found refuge with a fawn and his female, who fed and sheltered her in their cave, where she slept on a bed of leaves with their shaggy nurslings. And in this cave as he had seen a stalker idol of wood, extremely seamed and ancient, before which the wood creatures, when they thought she slept, laid garlands and the wild bee's honeycomb. She told him also of a hill village of weavers, where she lived many weeks, and learned to ply their trade in return for her lodging, and where wayfaring men in the guise of cobblers, charcoal burners or goat herds came and taught strange doctrines at midnight in the poor hovels. What they taught she could not clearly tell, save that they believed each soul could commune directly with its maker, without need of priest or intercessor. Also, as he had heard from some of their disciples, that there are two gods, one of good and one of evil, and that the god of evil has his throne in the Pope's palace in Rome. But in spite of these dark teachings, they were a mild and merciful folk, full of loving kindness toward poor persons and wayfarers, so that her heart grieved for them, when one day a Dominican monk appeared in the village with a company of soldiers, and some of the weavers were seized and dragged to prison, while others, with their wives and babes, fled to the winter woods. She fled with them, fearing to be charged with their heresy, and for months they lay hid in desert places, the older and weaker, who fell sick from want and exposure, being devoutly ministered to by their brethren, and dying in the sure faith of heaven. All this she related modestly and simply, not as one who joys in a godless life, but as having been drawn into it through misadventure. And she told the hermit, that when she heard the sound of church bells she never failed to say an avenue or a pater, and that often, as she lay in the midnight darkness of the forest, as he had hushed her fears, by reciting the versicles from the evening hour. Keep us, O Lord, as the apple of the eye, protect us under the shadow of thy wings. The wound in her foot healed slowly, and the hermit, while it was mending, repaired daily to her cave, reasoning with her in love and charity, and exhorting her to return to the cloister. But this she persistently refused to do, and fearing lest she attempt to fly before her foot was healed, and so expose herself to hunger and ill usage, he promised not to betray her presence, or to take any measures toward restoring her to her order. He began indeed to doubt whether as he had any calling to the life enclosed, yet her gentleness and innocency of mind made him feel that she might be won back to holy living, if only her freedom were assured. So after many inward struggles, since his promise forbade his taking counsel with any concerning her, he resolved to let her remain in the cave till some light should come to him. And one day, visiting her about the hour of nones, for it became his pious habit to say the evening office with her, he found her engaged with a little goat herd, who in a sudden seizure had fallen from a rock above her cave, and lay senseless and full of blood at her feet. And the hermit saw with wonder how skillfully she bound up his cuts, and restored his senses, giving him to drink of a liquor as he had distilled from the wild simples of the mountain. Whereat the boy opened his eyes and praised God, as one restored by heaven. Now it was known that this lad was subject to possessions, and had more than once dropped lifeless while he heeded his flock, And the hermit, knowing that only great saints or unclean necromancers can loosen devils, feared that the wild woman had exorcised the spirits by means of unholy spells. But she told him that the goatherd's sickness was caused only by the heat of the sun, and that, such seizures being common in the hot countries whence she came, as he had learned from a wise woman, how to stay them by a decoction of the Carduus Benedictus, made in the third night of the waxing moon, but without the aid of magic. But, she continued, you need not fear my bringing scandal on your holy retreat, for by the arts of the same wise woman my own wound is well nigh healed, and tonight at sunset I set forth on my travels. The hermit's heart grew heavy as she spoke, and it seemed to him that her own look was sorrowful. And suddenly his perplexities were lifted from him, and he saw what was God's purpose with the wild woman. Why, said he, do you fly from this place, where you are safe from molestation, and can look to the saving of your soul? Is it that your feet weary for the road, and your spirits are heavy for lack of worldly discourse? She replied that as he had no wish to travel, and felt no repugnance to solitude. But, said she, I must go forth to beg my bread, since in this wilderness there is none but yourself to feed me. And moreover, when it is known that I have healed the goatherd, curious folk and scandalmongers may seek me out, and, learning whence I come, drag me back to the cloister. Then the hermit answered her, and said, colon, in the early days, when the faith of Christ was first preached, there were holy women who fled to the desert and lived there in solitude, to the glory of God and the edification of their sex. If you are minded to embrace so austere a life, contenting you with such sustenance as the wilderness yields, and wearing out your days in prayer and vigil, it may be that you shall make amends for the great sin you have committed, and live and die in the peace of the Lord Jesus. He spoke thus, knowing that if she left him, and returned to her roaming, hunger and fear might drive her to fresh sin. Whereas in a life of penance and reclusion her eyes might be opened to her iniquity, and her soul snatched back from ruin. He saw that his words moved her, and she seemed about to consent, and embrace a life of holiness. But suddenly she fell silent, and looked down on the valley at their feet. A stream flows in the glen below us, she said. Do you forbid me to bathe in it in the heat of summer? It is not I that forbid you, my daughter, but the laws of God, said the hermit. Yet see how miraculously heaven protects you, for in the hot season, when your lust is upon you, our stream runs dry, and temptation will be removed from you. Moreover, on these heights there is no excess of heat to madden the body, but always, before dawn and at the Angelus, a cool breeze which refreshes it like water. And after thinking long on this, and again receiving his promise not to betray her, the wild woman agreed to embrace a life of reclusion. And the hermit fell on his knees, worshipping God and rejoicing to think that, if he saved his sister from sin, his own term of probation would be shortened. Thereafter for 2 years the hermit and the wild woman lived side by side, meeting together to pray on the great feast days of the year, but on all other days dwelling apart, engaged in pious practices. At first the hermit, knowing the weakness of woman, and her little aptitude for the life apart, had feared that he might be disturbed by the nearness of his penitent. But she faithfully held to his commands, abstaining from all sight of him save on the days of obligation. And when they met, so modest and devout was her demeanor, that she raised his soul to fresh fervency. And gradually it grew sweet to him to think that, nearby though unseen, was one who performed the same tasks at the same hours, so that, whether he tended his garden, or recited his chaplet, or rose under the stars, to repeat the midnight office, he had a companion in all his labors and devotions. Meanwhile the report had spread abroad, that a holy woman who cast out devils had made her dwelling in the hermit's cliff, and many sick persons from the valley sought her out, and went away restored by her. these poor pilgrims brought her oil and flour, and with her own hands she made a garden like the hermit's, and planted it with corn and lentils. But she would never take a trout from the brook, or receive the gift of a snared wild fowl, for she said that in her vagrant life the wild creatures of the wood had befriended her, and as he had slept in peace among them, so now she would never suffer them to be molested. In the third year came a plague, and death walked the cities, and many poor peasants fled to the hills to escape it. These the hermit and his penitent faithfully tended, and so skillful were the wild woman's ministrations, that the report of them reached the town across the valley, and a deputation of burgesses came with rich offerings, and besought her to descend, and comfort their sick. The hermit, seeing her depart on so dangerous a mission, would have accompanied her, but she bade him remain, and tend those who fled to the hills. And for many days his heart was consumed in prayer for her, and he feared lest every fugitive should bring him word of her death. But at length she returned, wearied out but whole, and covered with the blessings of the townsfolk. And thereafter her name for holiness spread as wide as the hermit's. Seeing how constant she remained in her chosen life, and what advances he had made in the way of perfection, the hermit now felt that it behoved him to exhort her again, to return to the convent, and more than once he resolved to speak with her, but his heart hung back. At length he bethought him that, by failing in this duty he imperiled his own soul, and thereupon, on the next feast day, when they met, he reminded her that in spite of her good works she still lived in sin and excommunicate, and that, now as he had once more tasted the sweets of godliness, it was her duty to confess her fault, and give herself up to her superiors. She heard him meekly, but when he had spoken she was silent and her tears ran over, and looking at her he wept also, and said no more. And they prayed together, and returned each to his cave. It was not till late winter that the plague abated, and the spring and early summer following were heavy with rains and great heat. When the hermit visited his penitent at the feast of Pentecost, she appeared to him so weak and wasted that, when they had recited the Veni, Sanct Spiritus, and the proper psalms, he taxed her with too great rigor of penitential practices. But she replied that her weakness was not due to an excess of discipline, but that as he had brought back from her labors among the sick a heaviness of body which the intemperance of the season no doubt increased. The evil rains continued, falling chiefly at night, while by day the land. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.